Welcome to the Eurovision Travel Guide. In this monthly series, we'll be exploring a country in the Eurovision Song Contest, learning about some of their entries, their national selection methods, and some other noteworthy points. This month, we are going to be taking a look at Croatia. This is ESC 101. Dobro jutro, dobro dan, dobre večer. Dobro došli u ESC 101, vaš dom Eurovizika povijesti I obskurnosti. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 16. My name is Alexander, and let's jump into Croatia's history at the Eurovision Song Contest. Croatia, or as it's known in its native language, Republika Hrvatska, is located in south-central Europe, part of the Balkan region, along the Mediterranean coast. Although technically it borders the Adriatic Sea, not the Mediterranean Sea, but it's still part of the larger body of water. It is bordered by five countries: Slovenia to the northwest, Hungary to the northeast, Serbia to the east, Bosnia and Herzegovina to the south and east, and a tiny border with Montenegro to the very south. Croatia borders almost entirely prevent Bosnia and Herzegovina from accessing the Adriatic, but there is a small exception of a very, very tiny piece of coastline that Croatia has graciously allowed them to have. Croatia has a population of around 3.8 million people, with a land area of around 56,600 square kilometers, or around 21,850 square miles. The capital city is Zagreb, and it has plenty to see, especially in the upper and lower towns, which serve as the cultural, religious, and commercial hubs of the city. There are lots of churches, parks, and architectural marvels to see, especially if you're into medieval design. Make sure to visit the Strossmayer Shet Ali Shit, which offers a great outdoor scene during the summer and has great views of the lower town. Croatia is a member of a number of international groups. They joined the European Union in 2013 and became part of the Schengen Zone and the Eurozone on January 1st, 2023, which allows passportless travel between Schengen Zone members, and they use the Euro, so be sure to get your hands on some brand new Croatian Euro coins. They also joined NATO in 2009, and I'll link a video done on Croatia by Geography Now in case you'd like to learn more about Croatian culture. Croatia's political history dates back to around the 7th century with the creation of the Duchy of Croatia, a state established by white Croats who migrated into the area, which was occupied by the province of Dalmatia within the Roman Empire. The duchy becomes magically transformed into the Kingdom of Croatia. Why, you may ask? Because Pope John VIII said so. In 879, the Pope recognized Duke Branimir as an independent ruler, and his grandson Tomislav became the king in 925, where a document that labeled Tomislav as the king ruling in the province of the Croats and in the Dalmatian regions, along with a letter sent by Pope John X, referenced Tomislav as a king, so the duchy becomes a kingdom because the Pope says so. Hooray! This lasts until 1102, when the Kingdom of Croatia enters a personal union with the Kingdom of Hungary, meaning that both kingdoms share the same monarch. This lasts for around 400-ish years, during which there are lots of wars. In 1526, during the Battle of Mohacs, King Louis II, who held the throne of Croatia and Hungary, was killed, and no one was around to replace him. The Habsburg monarchy takes control of the region and integrates it into their holdings. Croatia at this point is part of the lands of the Hungarian crown, but is subject to direct imperial Austrian rule because why not? Also, it became part of the Austrian Empire until 1867. The Austrian Empire gets integrated into Austria-Hungary as a whole, with Croatia becoming the Kingdom of Croatia-Slavonia, which operated as an autonomous kingdom within the empire and a constitutionally separate nation within Austria-Hungary. This arrangement lasted until, you guessed it, the First World War. Towards the end of the First World War, Austria-Hungary is getting carved up into more bite-sized pieces, and Croatia joins forces with surrounding territories to form the state of Slovenes, Croats, and Serbs. This lasts for 33 days, because after those 33 days, the officially recognized state of the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes was founded. Now, this is where I have to skip over the history of Croatia, as the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes serves as the starting point in Yugoslavia's history, and as they participated in the Eurovision Song Contest, their story will be saved for its own Eurovision Travel Guide episode. There is a brief moment during World War II where the independent state of Croatia is established, but this is basically a puppet state of Germany. Then it goes back to being Yugoslavia, and then we bring ourselves back to Croatian history with the breakup of Yugoslavia. Again, the actual story of the breakup of Yugoslavia will be saved for the Yugoslavia episode. We pick up Croatia's story in 1991, where they declared independence from Yugoslavia, and the Croatian War of Independence was fought until 1995, despite there being no formal declaration of war. Fighting occurs not just in Croatia, but in wider areas of former Yugoslav countries. International recognition of Croatia as a sovereign state occurs in 1992, and after the war, Croatia worked to rebuild and develop itself as an independent country. Democracy runs through the country, and Croatia emerges from the war as a member of the Council of Europe, a member of NATO and the European Union, and now enjoys membership in Schengen and the Eurozone. As part of Yugoslavia, Croatia had a broadcaster which was a subsection of Yugoslavenska Radiotelevizija under the name of RTV Zagreb, but as an independent country, Croatia's broadcaster is Hrvatska Radiotelevizija, or HRT, which joined the European Broadcasting Union in 1993. There have been plenty of Croatian artists that have represented Yugoslavia over the years on the Eurovision stage. There's conflicting information as to exactly how many times Croatian artists have represented Yugoslavia, so I went ahead and wrote down the nationalities of all of the artists and bands who represented Yugoslavia, and there were 13 entries that contained a Croatian artist or band. 1963, 65, 68, 69, 71, 72. 1983's entry was born in Montenegro but identifies as a Croatian. 1984's entry was born in North Macedonia but moved to Croatia when they were 2 months old and identifies as a Croatian. 1986, 87, 88, 89, and 1990. Yugoslavia also chose a Croatian act to represent them in 1985, but Yugoslavia ultimately withdrew from the contest that year. But as an independent country, Croatia has participated 28 times in the Eurovision Song Contest, debuting in 1993. They have only missed two contests since their debut, withdrawing in 2014 and 2015 due to financial difficulties and poor results between 2010 and 2013. Croatia has made it to the grand final on 19 occasions, failing to qualify in 2007, 2010 to 2013, and 2018 to 2022. They also almost didn't qualify in 2009, coming 13th in the semifinal, but because they were chosen as the jury wildcard, they advanced to the final that year. In the grand final, Croatia reached the top 10 on 6 occasions, with 3 of those being a top 5. Their highest placement is 4th place in 1996 and 1999. In the semifinals, they earned 3rd place in 1993 through Kvalifikacija za Millstreet, and they were in the top 5 in 2005 and 2008, coming 4th in their semifinals that year. They have never finished last in either the semifinals or the grand final. Croatia has sent their entries in either Croatian or English or both, with one song containing English and Italian lyrics. As is tradition with countries that have long participation histories, I won't commentate on every single entry, as this episode will become a several-hour-long opinion rant, but instead I encourage you to check out the Eurovision Forever project at the Deux Points podcast. Jack Eaton, the former co-host, and Elizabeth Allen, the current host of the podcast, did a series covering every single entry in the Eurovision Song Contest from 1956 to 2022. They covered Croatia up to 2019, and covered Croatia's 2021 and 2022 entries in the recaps of those years. So please go check out Deux Points Podcast. I will leave a link to the appropriate episodes on the show notes page of the ESC 101 website, esc101podcast.wordpress.com. Croatia has had several returning artists over the years. Daniela represented Croatia in 1995 as a member of the group Magazin and returned as a solo artist in 1998. Doris Dragovic represented Yugoslavia in 1986 and returned for Croatia in 1999. Martina Majori, who served as a backing vocalist for Claudia Benny in 2003 for Croatia, returned as a solo artist for Slovenia in 2009, as a backing vocalist for Montenegro in 2014, and for Croatia in 2016. Feminem, who represented Bosnia-Herzegovina in 2005, returned to represent Croatia in 2010. And finally, Jacques Hudek, who represented Croatia in 2017, returned in 2019 as a backing vocalist. Croatia's time at Eurovision as an independent country begins in 1993. They created a national final called Dora. 15 songs ultimately performed at the national final, with the winner being determined by 11 regional jury panels. Of course, if you know your Eurovision history, you'll know that in 1993, the EBU had to deal with an influx of new countries and decided to create a semifinal called Kvalifikacija za Millstreet. Croatia enters Kvalifikacija za Millstreet and ends up earning a spot at the 1993 Eurovision Song Contest alongside Slovenia and Bosnia-Herzegovina. They end up placing 15th at the contest, getting 31 points. Despite the language rules in place, Croatia sings a decent chunk of their song in English. I don't know how they got away with it, but perhaps with the delicate situation in the region, maybe the EBU just let it slide. But in any case, their entry is a plea for peace, much like many of the entries coming from former Yugoslav countries. This is a huge accomplishment for Croatia, as Eurovision serves a greater purpose than just showcasing musical talent. The Eurovision stage is used as a way to legitimize the independence of Croatia on the world stage, showing the millions of people that watch that Yugoslavia is no more and countries like Croatia have earned their independence through the struggles of war. Apparently, their 1993 entry was also a favorite to win the contest. Favorites of whom, I'm not sure, as this only got points from the UK, Israel, Portugal, Belgium, Norway, Switzerland, and Spain. And it's also weird that they didn't get any points from neighboring countries Bosnia-Herzegovina and Slovenia, but perhaps the breakup of Yugoslavia was too much for them, and it just didn't work out. Croatia continues to use the Dora National Final to select their entries to this day, with the exception of 2012, 2013, and 2016 to 2018, where they internally selected their entries. Dora's voting system changed a few times over the years, and that is an understatement. Buckle up for the history of Dora, because it's going to be a bit of a story. In 1995, the number of regional juries expands from 11 to 20. Sounds pretty reasonable. In 1996, Croatia went through the audio-only pre-qualification round and emerged into the grand final having come joint 19th with Slovenia in the pre-qualification round. 1996 is also the year they sent Maja Blagdan, who ended up setting the record for the highest note at Eurovision with a B-flat 5. This record was eventually broken in 2021 by Israel. Dora's voting system changed again in 1998, keeping the same 20 regional juries from each of the Croatian provinces, but this time adding a 21st jury whose votes come from a public televote. Interesting way of adding a televote system, but reducing the televote to 1/21 of the voting power is a bit problematic in my opinion. And then 1999 comes around, and controversy is just around the corner. In 1999, Croatia was represented by Doris Dragovic with the song Maria Magdalena. Personally, I am obsessed with this song. I love listening to it. It is amazing. But apparently her performance broke the rules, which I didn't realize until actually looking into it and realizing, actually, yeah, it did break the rules. The Norwegian delegation noticed that during the Croatian performance, there were male vocals being sung despite there being no male vocalists on stage. Of course, there were no hidden singers, and thus it was determined that the backing track had simulated vocals, which at the time was not allowed. All vocals had to be sung live. But several things about this confuses me. First off, how is it that it's the Norwegians that end up tattling on the Croatians? Surely someone on the technical team would have listened to the backing track disc to approve its use on the stage? Someone should have caught that from the EBU. And second, why would Croatia even bother to attempt to cheat like this? Doris Dragovic has a fantastic voice, and the song was absolutely amazing. Was it just too expensive for Croatia to add male vocalists on the stage? At any rate, the EBU ended up sanctioning Croatia, and they lost 33% of their points in calculating their average point total for qualification. This, I think, is not a very harsh punishment for essentially cheating on the Eurovision stage. I figured they would be, I don't know, disqualifying Croatia from the contest entirely that year, or, I don't know, reducing the amount of points or removing their points, putting them last. But I also love the song, so part of me doesn't want to disqualify Croatia. I'm kind of torn, and perhaps my bias is showing because I absolutely love this song and I'm like, leave Croatia alone, but also Croatia, you need to be punished for doing this. I don't know. Considering they were never relegated, it feels more like a slap on the wrist. Countries that have committed way less serious crimes have been barred from participating in Eurovision. For example, Romania and Bosnia-Herzegovina. While I absolutely love Croatia, and I personally don't care about the simulated male vocals, the EBU has rules for a reason, and it's important to ensure that all countries perform on a level playing field. Fast forwarding to 2001, the national final Dora enters the 21st century with a total overhaul of the voting system. So instead of the 21 juries, the winner was chosen by 5 regional juries, 4 televoting regions, an expert jury, whatever that means, and internet voting. Eat your heart out, Junior Eurovision. Croatia was doing an online vote way before you ever did. Next year in 2002, controversy struck yet again, this time in their national final. One of the juries made a mistake in their voting and gave their 10 and 12 points to the incorrect artists. They eventually corrected their mistake, giving their 12 points to Vesna Pisarovic, who ultimately was chosen to represent Croatia, taking away 12 points from Joy, who ended up coming 17th that night with only 9 points. That made little difference, however, as the difference between first and second place was more than 50 points, but every point counts, I guess. Next year, in 2003, Croatia's national final was becoming too large, and they ended up creating two semifinals, something which Eurovision took an extra 5 years to do. Croatia seems to be ahead of the curve when it comes to Eurovision systems. The semifinals had 12 songs each, with 6 advancing to the final, and the votes in both the semifinals and the grand final were determined by regional televoting. Then, a couple years later, in 2005, Dora went ahead and exploded, completely overhauling the system again. Oh boy. 20 entries competed in the national final, which consisted of 4 stages. A quarterfinal, 2 semifinals, a grand final, and a superfinal. Great naming scheme. Out of the 20 entries, 18 qualified from the quarterfinal, which I feel like is a waste of time. Why are you only rejecting 2 entries out of 20 when you could have easily done like 10? Using a whole production show to cut out just 10% of the entries just feels like a waste of money. Those 18 entries were split into 2 semifinals with 9 entries each, with 7 of those 9 advancing to the final. Again, why are you eliminating only 2 acts at a time? This isn't very efficient, in my opinion, but what the hell do I know? The grand final consists of 14 entries. The top 3 of those entries would advance to a superfinal, where a pure televote would select their favorite entry out of those 3. I actually love the idea of a superfinal giving the public a final say to select which entry they want to send to Eurovision. I think being able to use the semifinals and finals as a way to narrow down their selection to a top 3 artists from 14 is a great idea. But I feel like that could have been done with a 10-entry semifinal, narrowing it down to 5 per semi to have a 10-entry grand final and then the top 3 superfinal. But again, what do I know? All the shows except the superfinal were determined by a 50-50 split system between a televote and an expert jury, whatever expert jury means. Then 2006 rolls along, and it looks like Croatia took my advice and did away with the corner final nonsense. Hooray! They end up doing 2 semifinals, and they also got rid of the superfinal, which is neither here nor there for me, but they kept the 50-50 voting system. But apparently Croatia can't stop experimenting with their national final system. Please, Croatia, pick something and stick to it. They make changes once again. In 2008, now there's only 1 semifinal, with 10 songs being sent straight to the final by a selection jury and 6 entries from the semifinal being advanced to a final. The 50-50 system remains, but there is, however, some excitement, as the top 2 entries get the same amount of points, resulting in a tie. A tie-break rule is established where the jury vote is the overriding result, which, depending on who you are, that's either perfectly fine or an outrage and a crime. But considering what they sent in 2008, this was not a problem for me. I actually really liked that entry. But there was also some controversy regarding one of the acts. Apparently, song number 16, the song that was to go last, ended up being disqualified from the final after the artist didn't bother showing up for rehearsals. And despite receiving 1 point from the jury and 1 point from the televote, their votes were nullified. I don't know if it's like a family emergency or one of them is dying, but unless if it's a serious reason, you need to go to rehearsals. As somebody who's done audiovisual work for 15 years, rehearsals is one of the most important things to do in a production. You have to make sure that everything is set, and if you're not there, it just adds a whole lot more stress to the tech team, and honestly, their disqualification is justified. Also, another note for 2008, Croatia set yet another record in the Eurovision Song Contest. It looks like Croatia likes setting Eurovision records and changing their national finals. Croatia ends up sending the oldest known participant in the history of the contest up to that point, sending 75-year-old Ladislav Dimitrovi, aka Laki, to be part of the group.
Vidiš, prijatelju, ja pamtim sve. I mogu ti reći da između ove i milion drugih pjesama ne postoje razlika.
The record was broken in 2012 by Russia and then again in 2013 by Switzerland. In 2010, Dora changes its program once again. Why can't Dora just sit still? This time, Dora allows the top 8 songs from a single semifinal, determined by a pure televote, to join 8 other songs which pre-qualified to the final. They still use the 50-50 system remaining for the main final. Then 2011 rolls around, and can you guess what happens next? That's right, Dora changes yet again! Oh, please, I respect you at Eurovision Croatia. I even love some of your entries, like a decent amount of them, but you need to stop changing your national final format. This time there are heats, a quarterfinal, a semifinal, and a final final. Ooh. Okay, look, my brain is beginning to melt from all of the changes, and I'm sure yours is as well. So, to the relief of myself, yourself, and statisticians everywhere, Croatia took the hint and internally selected their entries until 2018. Finally, some consistency. Except, not really, because under the internal selection system, they only qualified in 2016 and 2017. In my humble opinion, they should have qualified in 2018. I absolutely loved their entry that year. They came 17th, which I think is an absolute crime. That semifinal did have lots of entries that I loved. It's tough, but I would have loved to have seen Croatia in the final. But I've also loved to have seen so many countries, and honestly, I don't know how I would have picked my top 10 in that semifinal. With their mixed success from 2012 to 2018, Croatia decides to bring back Dora. Oh boy. In 2019, they removed the semifinals and kept the 50-50 voting system, but they ended up sending Roko, which, I mean, that entry just confused me. His voice is good, but the costume and the whole staging was just so surreal for me. I have no idea what was going on. 2020 rolls around, and of course, the pandemic cancels the contest, preventing Demir Kedjo from ever appearing on the Eurovision stage. Because rather than internally selecting him for 2021, which in my opinion would have been the correct move, they go ahead with Dora and choose someone else. Now, don't get me wrong, I love the Croatian entry for 2021, and looking back, I think it would have been great in the final. It ended up ultimately coming 11th, which is a bit harsh for me, but Croatia not giving Demir the right to represent them at Eurovision is just incorrect in my opinion. He won the chance to represent Croatia and he was not allowed to do so. However, that is not the worst controversy for Croatia in 2021. After performing in the national final, Nina Krajlik, who represented Croatia in 2016, ended up coming second in Dora 2021. She alleges that there were problems with her rehearsals where she had to listen to Albina's song in her in-ear headphones instead of her own, and she also said that many people couldn't vote for her due to telecommunication problems. The Croatian head of delegation said that there were no problems with the voting that would have affected the final result, which suggests that there were actually voting errors, and speculation at this point abounds. The controversy continues as a family member of another contestant, Bernarda Brunovic, who ended up coming 7th, alleged that they received information from the Croatian head of delegation that Bernarda could not win because they were on a blacklist. The family member also confirmed Nina's earlier allegations, but of course the head of delegation denies everything, the blacklist accusation and the telecommunication problems, and even more speculation abounds. But despite 2021's complete circus of controversy, Croatia moved on to, oh god, 2022. Okay, look, so the system hasn't changed from 2019 in Dora, so stabilization has come to Croatia. But perhaps it came at a cost because they send Maja Dimžić, which, oh good golly, it is a fashion, music, and staging disaster. How this song came 11th will be an absolute mystery to me. Albania, Latvia, and even Austria with those terrible vocals were miles better than the Croatian entry. I also love Slovenia, but I get why they didn't qualify. But Croatia honestly should have come second to last in that semifinal. That dress looks like she was wearing some pastel curtains. Those shoes belong in a thrift shop. The song is just so like blasé and middle of the road, and she's just standing there with a guitar. I mean, it's such a low effort entry. I cannot actively listen to the song. I'm just like, yawn, next. Then 2023 rolls around, and I think Croatia has finally had a meltdown as they sent Let 3 with their anthem of anti-dictatorship. When I first heard this song, I thought it was trash, garbage, easily last place. Then I listened to it a second time, then a third time, and then I became obsessed with the song. It is an anthem raising the middle finger to dictators, and honestly, it's so outlandish and perfect, and I miss Eurovision entries that do this kind of outlandish performance. I feel that Eurovision has slowly become more and more serious with its performances, and I like entries that just goof off and have a good time. And this one's also paired with, I think, a very important message, even in the craziness and the chaos. I was far too quick to judge Croatia in 2023, and I am very glad they sent Let 3. Croatia is set to participate in 2024, so let's hope their entry intrigues and does well at Eurovision. Looking at the voting system used between 1975 and 2015, when Croatia was in the grand final, it got the most points from Slovenia, with 105 points given across the grand finals Croatia was in, Bosnia and Herzegovina with 101, and Malta with a huge drop in points with 62. Oddly, despite Slovenia and Bosnia-Herzegovina loving Croatia, they gave no points to Croatia in 1993 and 1994, only starting to give points in 1995. But maybe perhaps that's not so odd because that coincides with the end of the war, but this is kind of me speculating. It's also interesting to note that Serbia and Montenegro gave Croatia 10 points in 2005 and 2006, so there is some love for them as well. Croatia does have a single clear favorite when it comes to giving points at the grand final. Croatia ends up giving Bosnia-Herzegovina 144 points when they were in the grand final, with Malta getting the second most points with 82, and Slovenia and the UK tying for third position with 64 each. What the numbers don't show you is that Croatia gave their 12 points to Serbia and Montenegro in 2004 and 2005, the only two times that they have participated, which really should mean that Serbia Montenegro was Croatia's favorite, considering they gave their number one points to Serbia Montenegro, but by a pure numbers game, Bosnia-Herzegovina gets that number. Of course, I'm not going to accuse Croatia of neighbor voting or bias of any kind. I would never do such a thing. But I'll let the numbers speak for themselves. Croatia ends up giving the winning entry of each year an average of 6 points over their participation up to 2015, meaning that they aren't very great at picking winners, but instead they are very good at voting for former Yugoslav republics. And that is the long-winded history of Croatia at Eurovision. The story of a former Yugoslav republic with an indecisive personality changing their national final system countless times until they finally settled on a system that works for them. Hopefully they don't pursue any more changes until they are actually needed. And just like Croatia's national final, the world of Eurovision news does change from time to time. So let's take a look at some of our top stories. Let's turn to the Eurovision report. Jamala, the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest 2016, is officially wanted by Russian authorities. After the invasion took place, Jamala and her family fled to Australia. She continues to be outspoken about the war, and the Russian authorities specifically accused her of spreading fake information about the atrocities committed in the Ukrainian town of Bukha in 2022. Russian authorities insist they were not responsible for the attack on Bukha, even though we all know they did, and as a result, they have issued an arrest warrant for Jamala. She responded with a story on Instagram with her standing in front of the Sydney Opera House containing a link to the original article and a facepalm emoji. This is reported by Albert Bortgreen of ESC Extra. This has been the Eurovision Report. And now it's time for Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I choose an entry that I find terrible, regrettable, fabulous, or just plain enjoyable. Since this is a Eurovision travel guide episode, I've gone ahead and selected a Croatian entry to be this week's pick. Let's find out which entry gets Song of the Week. This week's song of the week is the Croatian entry for 2008, Romanca, translated as Romance, sung by Kraljevi Ulce and 75 Cents, composer and lyricist Miran Veljković. It ended up placing 21st in the grand final with 44 points, 10 points from Bosnia and Herzegovina, 8 points from Slovenia, 5 points from Latvia, and points from 11 other countries. All right, so I'm going to tell you what I thought the song was about, just looking at the staging and listening to the lyrics, which I have no idea what they actually mean in English. And then I'm going to actually tell you what the song is about. So I thought this song was about a dramatic and romantic tale involving the mafia. The main singer looks like a mobster who has fallen in love with the mob boss's daughter, the mob boss being the elderly gentleman in white and the daughter being in the red dress. The daughter escapes from her father, dancing around the stage in a very sultry way, showing off her flexibility and her reflexes. She dances for the main singer, seducing him with her charms, and he can't help but fall for her. But the daughter has to rush back to her stand, posing herself perfectly for her father, who screams in frustration, disapproving of the match. The daughter and main singer slowly convince the mob boss to approve the relationship, where he eventually breaks down and celebrates the love of two people by scratching on a gramophone. Such a thrilling tale of romance, intrigue, and triumph. Love conquers all. Now, that would have been a fantastic entry, but sadly for Croatia, none of that actually happened. This song is actually about convincing the audience that elderly people aren't completely senile and useless in modern society. Basically, the singer is going back to nostalgic memories of beauty, wanting to show his romantic side through his life experiences. But the lyrics, translated on the Diglu Thrush website, translated by Daniela Kreži, point out, "I have been told today that I am out of my league, technological waste like a monkey on a branch, and I was the first internet in the world. On the ships, I connected the planet with music." I have to say, we should most certainly value our elders and those who come before us. They possess a wisdom and perspective that many of us don't possess. But that being said, I like my idea way better, and I give that pure 12 points. The actual meaning of song, I honestly get the frustration, but with the tone of the song, the dramatic tones, the strings, the tango vibe, I did not get any of that. If you want to help alleviate elders in your community, there's lots of ways to volunteer, whether it's visiting them or facilitating a sense of community. Doing it with this song is just weird. It doesn't fit. Also, the reason why the group is called Kraljevi Ulce and 75 Cents is because the Kraljevi Ulce translates as kings of the street, and 75 cents is for the man in white, as he was 75 years old at the time of his performance. A bit odd. Personally, I would have put him with the kings of the street, as he is definitely a king in my books. But for my made-up reason of being a dramatic mobster romance song and not the actual reason, this entry gets Song of the Week. Croatia has a story which is shared with multiple countries emerging from former Yugoslavia. While Croatia has been erratic in its national finals, they do have a comforting presence in Eurovision and have sent some pretty iconic entries, including those I love from 1999, 2008, and most recently 2023. I have confidence that Croatia will one day win the contest as their own country, as they technically won the contest while being a part of Yugoslavia, and I hope to visit Zagreb for myself one day. Thank you so much for joining me in this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us with your thoughts and comments on Croatia and the Eurovision Song Contest, you can reach out to us on our Instagram account at ESC101podcast. You can also send an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. We're also now on Tumblr, so be sure to check us out and watch as I try to figure out how that platform works exactly. Be sure to check out the show notes on our website, www.esc101podcast.wordpress.com, and feel free to leave us a review on whichever podcast platform you are currently listening on, as it helps other Eurovision history fans such as yourself find the show. Subscribe to the podcast and check out our previous episodes where we talk about a variety of topics covering Eurovision history, including hosts, interval acts, artists, and origin stories. We're also starting to put out a poll and a Q&A section on Spotify. So if you're curious to check those out, we're going to be asking a question on the poll and a question on the Q&A. So feel free to send us your thoughts on the questions for this week. Next week, we're going to be exploring the backstory of a Eurovision interval act. So be sure to stay tuned to find out who we'll be looking at next. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.